There was a 3.6 earthquake in the Los Angeles area last night. It was minor enough for some people to sleep through, but it's a reminder of another potential disaster, a major earthquake in California. Given all the questions about whether Florida or Texas could have been more prepared for their recent disasters, let's look at the preparation in California for the big one. We're joined by Lucy Jones, who's a research associate at the Seismological Laboratory of Caltech. Dr. Jones, welcome to Here and Now.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And there have been reports for a long time that a big quake is due in California, maybe overdue. Is there really a way to predict that?
There is no way to predict the time of when it will happen, but that it will happen is an absolute certainty. It's like, you know, you aren't going to stop the sun shining and you aren't going to stop the plates moving. And as long as the plates keep on moving, eventually the earthquakes have to happen. We just don't know when.
And we think that a major quake is overdue?
Overdue implies that we're increasing the likelihood because of how long it's been since the last one. But as far as we can tell, the timing is pretty random. What we can say is that every year in California has at least a 1% chance of a very, very large earthquake and a several percent chance of an earthquake, a small earthquake like the size of Northridge, which was the 94 earthquake.
Right, in the Los Angeles area. And right. Is there more of a fear of a quake affecting L.A. or San Francisco, or is it an equal chance?
They're reasonably close. We're both sitting on the plate boundary, and the San Andreas Fault is the fastest moving fault and therefore has earthquakes the most often. Overall, the LA area ends up with more events, partly because the plate boundary here is much more complicated. There's really three faults to worry about in the Bay Area and about 300 faults to worry about in Southern California.
Is there the possibility of an earthquake that would affect the entire state of California at the same time?
It's improbable, extremely improbable, that we would have one earthquake that was so large as to affect both areas. I mean, the magnitude of an earthquake tells you the length of the fault that moves. And we have a sort of a section between the two regions that doesn't move easily in big earthquakes. It has a lot of small ones instead. That said, one earthquake triggering another is extremely common, and it's not just very nearby and calling them aftershocks. It also happens at greater distances. So a magnitude 8 on the San Andreas in Southern California triggering a 7 on the Hayward Fault in San Francisco as essentially a distant aftershock, that's a much more probable scenario.
So one could affect the other.
Oh, yeah. We definitely see earthquake triggering over distances of hundreds of miles.
So the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco is still one of the worst disasters in American history. This is one that people look back to. It killed about 3,000 people. What would an earthquake of the same magnitude mean for San Francisco today?
Probably many dead, maybe as many or more, because we have so many more people there now.
Right.
We have building codes, but your building's as good as the building code in place when it was built. So, you know, the most modern ones include everything that we know about earthquakes at this point. But there are classes of buildings, especially some of the older concrete commercial buildings, that we know to be very vulnerable. And we expect to, if they don't get retrofitted, they will collapse in the bigger earthquakes and kill a lot of people at the time. Our cities have become more complex entities, and we are more dependent on engineered systems to sustain life. In 1906, you lost your sewer, you really could go and dig a hole in your backyard. It's not really an option anymore. And so the likely destruction of sewer pipes is a potential public health nightmare. I've actually studied it in more detail for Southern California, where we took a big San Andreas earthquake and tried to say what would happen to Los Angeles. We got an estimate of about 2,000 dead for that earthquake.
And there would be a lot of fires. I was reading that that would be one of the major problems that would lead to a lot of deaths.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, it happened in 1906, and much of the city was burnt in that event. Every time we've had a really large earthquake in a dense urban area, we've seen catastrophic fires. And, you know, in Northridge in 94 in Los Angeles, and 1989, the Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area, each of those produced more than 100 fires that required all of the capacity they had to fight them. And they were able to get those fires in control because those weren't very big earthquakes. When we scale up to the San Andreas earthquake, we expect something like 20 times as many households to receive the same level of shaking. And our estimate was 1,600 fires for a Los Angeles area earthquake, comparable for Northern California. And then you don't, you know, the way a modern fire department acts now is it depends that for the very biggest events, mutual aid, other places send in aid. But when you have a really big earthquake, your cry for help is going to be met by a plea for help in return. And our mutual aid is going to have to come in from other states and take time to get there. So the analyses of what a fire could be like in our really big earthquake still looks like a potentially catastrophic event. You know, San Francisco, after the 1906 earthquake burned down the city, as they rebuilt, they built in cisterns. So they have buried water supplies, big cisterns under various parts of the city, as a completely separate water system as a backup for the worst fires. And of course, it, you know, it decayed over the years, but actually, when Senator Feinstein was mayor of San Francisco, she authorized rebuilding the system, and they have that for the city of San Francisco itself. But, you know, the, most of the Bay Area is not the city of San Francisco. We don't have it here in Los Angeles, and it's not, it doesn't make sense to come in and say, you know, put cisterns under the city now. But the new seismic resilience measure that Mayor Garcetti of Los Angeles has undertaken includes a partnership between the fire department and the water department to try and develop an alternative firefighting system, probably tapping into our drainage channels and rivers, trying to look for any water source we can. The messaging to individuals includes make sure you have a fire extinguisher and know how to use it. And a fire that you would have called the fire department for without the earthquake, you've got to try and fight it yourself in that earthquake response mode, because if it gets out of control, there's nobody that can really fight it. And it's probably the scariest picture when we look at what's going to happen during the big earthquake.
One of the big problems in Florida following Hurricane Irma has been the loss of power around the state. What do we know about what would happen in California in a big earthquake and how difficult it would be to get power back up again?
It's maybe the second scariest thing after what we look at happens with the fire. Power companies here, of course, have gone through a few earthquakes. They know what happens, and they're trying to gear up for it. Again, the problem is the scale. When we have a San Andreas earthquake that's 20 times as long a fault as we had in Northridge or Loma Prieta, then it's a, you know, the scale of doing it is very, very difficult. We worry about loss of transmission into the region because all of our big transmission lines have to cross the San Andreas Fault to get to us. Same with our outside water. You know, Southern California is famous for the water coming in. This is true in the Bay Area as well, that most of the lifeline systems come in across the fault. Now, most of the big utilities are doing a lot of work trying to mitigate it. It's requiring a different approach. And we're seeing in the last few years a recognition that, oh, I was able to handle Northridge doesn't mean you can handle the big one. And there's a lot of planning efforts going on in both Northern and Southern California right now. So I have hope because of that. But we should expect that there will be a big enough problem somewhere in the grid when the earthquake happens that the whole grid will shut down. And then it's going to be a question of how do we get that back up and started again.
After Hurricane Harvey, a lot of people looked at Houston and said, well, because of the design of Houston, it made the problem worse because of the overdevelopment of Houston. Similarly, in Florida, people said, you know, because of all of the development, a lot more people are being affected because they're living in low-lying areas next to the coast. What do you think people will be saying after the next quake in California when they start to look at what might have been done better to avoid the catastrophe?
Well, I will point out that California is much more enamored of regulation than Texas or Florida. So there actually are a lot of codes in place that will help. One of the things that will surprise people, don't surprise me, your building's only as good as the building code in place when it was built. And our older buildings have known problems. I think there are going to be a lot of people are going, wait a minute, how come my building fell down? You know, don't we have building codes? That's one issue. The other one is that the current code is aimed at life safety. We have sort of philosophically said, if you choose to make such a weak building that it's a total financial loss during the earthquake, that's your financial choice to make. The role of government is to make sure you don't kill somebody in the process. And because of that, I think we will see a much smaller death toll than we might have otherwise seen. But we're going to have a lot of new, brand new two-code buildings that are a complete financial loss after the event. Most building owners are barely aware that that, in fact, is what the code is giving them, crawl out alive. We've been talking about it a lot in the last few years, and I think we're starting to see some energy because the increased cost of a usable building compared to just life safety is about 1% the construction cost. A lot of people think that could be worthwhile.
That's Lucy Jones, who is a research associate at the Seismological Laboratory of Caltech and the founder of the Dr. Lucy Jones Center for Science and Society. Very interesting. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.